Listeners who are blind, have low vision, or have another print disability, which makes reading, holding a book, or turning a page difficult or impossible. The content is copyrighted by the respective publishers. For more information, please visit us on the web at nfradioreading.org.
Hello, this is Elaine, and for the next hour I'll be reading from the December 7th, 2025 issue of the Sunday Gusto from the Buffalo News on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. And on the front page, take a tour with Tom and Jerry. Sampling versions of the boozy egg holiday cocktail is a big thing in Buffalo. A Tom and Jerry tour of Buffalo will take you to dining rooms wrapped in wainscoting, to places where servers still call you honey. You might sit on the bar stool next to a plow driver, fresh off the overnight shift, who is drinking a Pabst Blue Ribbon and confessing he doesn't care much for Tom and Jerry. But he'll say the one in your hand is the best one around. And also, don't forget to try the mustard with your fried bologna and onion sandwich. You'll love your first Tom and Jerry, the familiar taste of hot rum and brandy cushioned by a thick coating of nutmeg-spiced egg batter. By the third, you'll become a Tom and Jerry critic. Your lips coated in an egg batter mustache will talk of differences in bars' batter consistencies and booze ratios. By the fifth Tom and Jerry, you'll rule the day when someone thought that a cocktail made out of raw pancakes was a good idea. Then you'll have your sixth and final Tom and Jerry of the tour, and you'll understand. It was never about the Tom and Jerry. It was about the weird snippets of bar conversations you overheard along the way. The Tom and Jerry tour is a growing local tradition, especially since tourism group Visit Buffalo created a Tom and Jerry trail a few years ago. Buses and limos arrive at Tom and Jerry serving restaurants on the Saturdays between Thanksgiving and New Year's, like they would roll up to a winery for a summer tasting tour. Before, it wasn't a big thing, and now it is a big thing, said Cindy Oliveri, who has been a server at Schwabel's for 30 years. On my self-guided tour this week, I visited 6 of the 26 restaurants serving Tom and Jerry's. I began in McPartland's Corner, an Irish tavern in Amherst that has made the drink for over 40 years, then Glen Park Tavern nearby in Williamsville, where it's been served for around 20 years. Then I went to Schwabel's in West Seneca, which has made Tom and Jerry's for around 80 years. Then I tried a modern culinary Tom and Jerry at Hydraulic Hearth in Buffalo's Larkinville district, and a new sake-based Tom and Jerry at Cooney's in Buffalo's Elmwood Village neighborhood. I ended the tour across the street from Cooney's at The Place, which has also been serving the cocktail since the 1940s. There's something ridiculous yet endearing about the Tom and Jerry that shines through the most while you're in its pursuit. There has never been a time when the Tom and Jerry wasn't a punchline, a sheepish grin. In 1840s Buffalo, when the drink was popular in taverns around Christmas, newspaper writers joked that people having too many Tom and Jerry's when they did something like, say, lose their horse and wagon parked outside the bar. It's the funniest part of 1949 Christmas song about being hungover. I just go nuts at Christmas. The lyrics go, down at the corner, the crowd is so merry, I end up drinking about 12 Tom and Jerry. McPartland's bartender, John Cardis, said no one has ever had more than 2 Tom and Jerry's. At McPartland's, where the bar fills up each afternoon with regulars drinking Guinness, I had the sole Tom and Jerry. One regular in an Adidas tracksuit joked as he entered the bar, hey, give me 10 Tom and Jerry's. He ordered 0 Tom and Jerry's. Despite feeling like a newbie at the gym in January, I was accepted into the fold of McPartland's regulars easily. The bar engaged in a communal conversation about sports, loosely led by the bartender, like it was a game of hacky sack. Anyone could jump in. The regulars, even if they mostly don't drink the cocktail, like the new faces that blow in during Tom and Jerry season. It just means more people to chat with under the canopy of shining baubles dangling from the ceiling. The Tom and Jerry's at McPartland's and Schwabble's are both served in vintage glassware. They're thinner than the versions at Glen Park Tavern and The Place, which both come in custom coffee mugs and have especially thick layers of gooey batter like marshmallows warmed by a bonfire flame. In the Elmwood Village, Cooney's Japanese spin on the Tom and Jerry called a Tamagozaki is punchier than the traditional rum and brandy version. It's a teacup of hot sake topped with a characteristic sweet batter and nutmeg dust. Hydraulic Hearth in Larkinville has reimagined the Tom and Jerry. Bar manager Danny Dipso invented what he calls a culinary version of the drink after his own Tom and Jerry tour a few years ago. Unlike most Tom and Jerry's, Hydraulic Hearth mixes rum and brandy with warm milk instead of hot water. Rather than scooping from a bowl, Dispo squirts the creamy, rich, frothy batter from a pressurized canister into the mug. The flavors of sweet batter and hot booze marry each other in this more integrated Tom and Jerry. It's less like a Starbucks cold foam coffee and more like a boozy hot chocolate. No stirring is required. A great drink is always growing, Dispo said. It's this relentless pursuit of perfection that I think a lot of chefs and bartenders have. It's about refinement and taking less steps to make something more delicious. As Dispo spoke, while holiday lights shone through the garland and around thick green wreaths in the window, a pair of women walked in to tell the bartender that Hydraulic Hearth was the first stop on their Tom and Jerry tour. Every night, Dispo said. If someone drinks only one Tom and Jerry for the entire season, however, Dispo doesn't think it should be his. He always recommends Elmwood Village's The Place. Go there, he said, because it is a vibe. The Place is where my tour ended. Oozing mugs of Tom and Jerry's littered the bar. Shiny ornaments dangled from the ceiling there, too. Poinsettia garland clung to the wall. When Tom and Jerry's made their first local comeback in the 1930s after Prohibition, they changed, not the drink itself necessarily, but the occasion to drink one. People started hosting Tom and Jerry parties. The Tom and Jerry, once short of silly, became glamorous. It was a cocktail for socialites who bought fancy glassware from the department store. The modern-day Tom and Jerry experience somehow encapsulates all of its past. We drink it at neighborhood bars. We still joke about it. It can be elevated and upscale or traditional and humble. A Tom and Jerry tour spans it all. What we can all agree on is that it's ours. And where you can fulfill your Tom and Jerry fix, Western New York embraces the old-time Tom and Jerry cocktail more every year. Last year, we wrote about 22 bars and restaurants that serve Tom and Jerry's, and our 2025 list has grown to 26 spots. The Tom and Jerry, a mug of hot brandy, rum, water, and gooey egg batter with nutmeg dust, has been served in Buffalo for at least 184 years. It's seen a resurgence over the past decade or so as new restaurants continue an old tradition. Some evolve the tradition. Hydraulic Hearth's creamy Tom and Jerry is made with warm milk instead of hot water, for example, and Cooney's uses hot sake instead of rum and brandy. Here's a list of 26 bars and restaurants serving them this holiday season. Most will serve them through New Year's Eve. The Barrel Factory, Kohl's, Creekview Restaurant, the Delaware Pub and Grill, Fairbanks, the Grange Bar and Restaurant, Glen Park Tavern, Graylin, Hoax Lakeshore Restaurant, Hydraulic Hearth, Iron Tail Tavern, Cooney's, McPartland's Corner, McHugh, North Star Tavern, Oliver's, The Place, Remedy House, Resurgence Brewing Company, Rohal's Corner, Rusty Nickel Brewing Company, Schwabble's, Shirt Factory, Waxlight Bar à Vin, The West End Inn, and Winfield's Pub. And in Things to Do, Holiday Traditions with BPO, Dickens, and White Christmas. It's December, the most festive time of the year, and a month packed with holiday activities. It's also a time of tradition, and we have many. Here are a few to enjoy. Holidays with the Buffalo Philharmonic Orchestra. The Buffalo Philharmonic Orchestra performs multiple holiday concerts each December. Joanne's Classical Christmas mixes traditional treasures like Fanfare, Joy to the World, and the Hallelujah Chorus from Handel's Messiah, with newer favorites, including We Need a Little Christmas and Pas de Deux from The Nutcracker, and Somewhere in My Memory by John Williams from Home Alone. Joanne Faletta conducts the BPO along with guest soprano Sigourney Cook, the Buffalo Philharmonic Chorus, and the Hamburg High School Chamber Choir. Performances are at 10:30 a.m. December 12th and 7:30 p.m. December 13th in Kleinhaus Music Hall. Bring the kids to the Jingle Bell Jam that has pre-concert activities and a sing-along with Santa in concerts at noon and 4 p.m. on December 14th in Kleinhaus. Grant O'Brien conducts a fun afternoon that includes soprano Kate Bassett, who also narrates 'Twas the Night Before Christmas, plus the Royal Academy of Ballet and Dance. Visit bpo.org for all events. And A Christmas Carol. Alleyway Theater continues its tradition of staging the Charles Dickens classic, but this year it's being presented in a new adaptation by playwright Daniel F. Lenzian that promises to remain faithful to the original story. I've been consistently surprised and delighted by Dickens' original story and also by scenes that appear in his text but don't often make it to the stage versions, but appear in this version, Lenzian said. The play's director, Chris Handley, artistic director for Alleyway, said there will be new sets, costumes, and puppets. The audiences will be on three sides of the stage, and that brings each of us closer to the story. And with a set that fully surrounds the theater, audiences will feel cozy and warm as the action unfolds all around them. Mike Garvey stars as Scrooge. Pay What You Can performances start Thursday. Opening night is Sunday with shows through December 28th. And you can go to alleyway.com. Mike Randall returns with his long-running solo show, Charles Dickens Presents A Christmas Carol, at locations throughout Western New York. Performances are at 3 p.m. tonight at the Ellicott Creek Playhouse, 7:30 p.m. Friday and Saturday, and 2:30 p.m. Sunday at the Kavanaki Theater, 7 p.m. on December 18th at the West Falls Center for the Arts, 7 p.m. December 19th at the Medina Theater, and 3 p.m. December 20th at the Angola Theater. And the Nutcracker, Neglia Ballet, and the Buffalo Philharmonic Orchestra are joined by Buffalo Girl Choir for the Holiday Ballet. The final performance is at 1 p.m. today in Shays Buffalo Theater. The Classical Ballet of Western New York performs the Nutcracker at 2 and 7 p.m. Saturday and 2 p.m. next Sunday at Lockport Palace Theater at 2 East Avenue, Lockport. And then we have White Christmas. Though Irving Berlin originally wrote the beloved song White Christmas in 1942 for the film Holiday Inn, it is most identified with the 1944 movie that shares its name and musical spirit. We can watch the Bing Crosby musical on the big screen multiple times this month and see a new stage production. Musical Fair stage adaptation runs through December 21st in Shays 710 Theater at 710 Main Street. The cast includes John Kazurowski, Cindy Cruiser, Sean Ryan, Maria Pedro, and Gregory Jurich. Colorful costumes are faithful to the movie, as are the many songs Chris Kelly directs. Choreography is by Christy Cavanaugh and music direction by Teresa Quinn. You can visit musicalfair.com. The 1954 movie will be shown at 11 a.m. next Sunday at the Aurora Theater, 673 Main Street, East Aurora, and at 11:30 a.m. December 21st at the North Park Theater at 1428 Hurdle Avenue as part of its Old Hollywood Holidays. And that brings us to holiday films on the big screen. The North Park Theater continues its classic film series the next two weekends. Next up is Cary Grant and The Bishop's Wife, 1947, at 11:15 a.m. today. Then it's Bing Crosby and Ingrid Bergman in The Bells of St. Mary's at 11:15 next Saturday and Sunday. It's a Wonderful Life has multiple showings. See it at the Screening Room Cinema and Arts Cafe in Amherst at 7:30 Friday and December 16th, 1 and 7:30 p.m. December 20th and 7:30 p.m. December 23rd. It will also be shown at 11 a.m. December 21st at the Aurora Theater in East Aurora. And Charlie Brown, A Charlie Brown Christmas National Tour stops here for a show at 7 p.m. Wednesdays in Shea's Buffalo Theater, 646 Main Street. Join Charlie Brown, Snoopy, Lucy, and the gang in this musical stage production performed by actors, not costumed characters, with the music of Vince Guaraldi. Join in the sing-along at the end. And other events, Holiday Art Market, 11 to 5, Friday and Saturday at the Castellani Art Museum at Niagara University. This is the first holiday art market for the museum, which is transforming its central gallery to a marketplace with more than 25 local artists, makers, and galleries. There'll be food and drink pop-ups, including the Village Bake Shop, the Niagara Coffee Company, Three Sisters Garlic and Oils, and a CAM volunteer bake sale. Admission is suggested at $5, free for CAM members and ages 12 and younger, with proceeds supporting the Castellani Art Museum exhibitions and programs. And Musicians of Buffalo, 7 p.m. Saturday at Asbury Hall at Babeville. Billy Sheehan, Jesse Galante, and Bobby Lee Bell gather again under the moniker of Musicians of Buffalo for their 10th annual holiday concert, with a portion of the proceeds benefiting Music is Art. They will be joined by many of their talented friends once again in a concert featuring rock and holiday songs. Joe Hesse, bassist and founding member of The Road, is traveling from California to perform. The event also is touting Talis VW, with Sheehan joined by Mark Miller and Kyer Najovsky, performing with vocalist Jim Cream. Doors open at 7 p.m. Show starts at 8. Advance tickets are $30, $40 at the venue. You can go to babevillebuffalo.com to learn more. And you're listening to a reading of articles and features from the Sunday Gusto from the Buffalo News on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. And in the taste section, 'tis the seasoning. Spice up your holidays for flavor and health benefits. This article is from Harvard Health Publishing. Part of the excitement of the holidays is eating our favorite foods, many of which feature spices we barely encounter in our cuisine the rest of the year. But when you reach for spices to add to festive meals and baked treats, you're doing more than waking up neglected taste buds. You're also grabbing ingredients with the potential to boost your mood and health. While not every spice has undergone rigorous scientific testing, many boast anti-inflammatory effects. That means they inhibit damaging inflammation that can cause or worsen a variety of chronic diseases, says Eric Rim, a professor of epidemiology and nutrition at the Harvard T.H. Chan School of Public Health. Most people don't think about how their mind and body might benefit from spice use. Those of us who incorporate more of them around the holidays typically do so because it calls to mind cozy, special days and times with our families. It's what people remember from childhood and makes them feel warm and happy, so it's tied back to family tradition, Rim says. There are zesty benefits. Here's how some of the most beloved holiday spices can add zing to both your food and your health. Cinnamon. Cinnamon is a natural in holiday dishes, a staple in apple and pumpkin pies, breads, and of course cinnamon rolls. It also adds warmth to coffee, hot cocoa, and cider, and enhances squash or sweet potatoes. Much research has focused on cinnamon's ability to help regulate blood sugar, and scientists believe it helps cells use glucose more effectively, which is important for people with diabetes. Cloves. Cloves rarely shine brighter than around the holidays. Fundamental to gingerbread and fruitcake, they're also a common component of pumpkin pie as well as mulled wine and cider. High in antioxidants, which can lower the risk of chronic diseases, cloves contain vitamins and minerals. Research also suggests cloves offer antimicrobial effects, meaning they can help hinder bacterial growth. Ginger. Some holidays just wouldn't be the same without gingerbread cookies, but ginger, often prominent in spice blends with cinnamon, cloves, and nutmeg, also can add punch to holiday stuffing and complement root vegetables such as carrots, parsnips, and sweet potatoes. It's well known for its digestive benefits, relieving nausea as well as gas and bloating. And next, turmeric. With its earthy and slightly peppery taste, turmeric adds pizzazz to holiday turkey as well as roasted carrots or cauliflower. Some Hanukkah dishes are also a good fit for turmeric. Another well-researched spice, turmeric is rich in phytonutrients that neutralize so-called free radicals and shield cells from damage. Studies have linked consuming turmeric to less arthritis pain and move improvement. Sprinkle generously. So to maximize the health benefits of spices, you need to use more than a dash here and there, Rim notes. The higher the dose, the greater the benefits. But while adding more spices to your cooking can be good for your health, it doesn't mean spice supplements offer the same benefits or that they're safe for everyone. Many people add cinnamon to foods because of its potential anti-inflammatory effects. If you add a teaspoon or two of cinnamon to your breakfast every day, for instance, you can reap the benefits. It's almost like you're taking a pill, doing it therapeutically. If you've been relegating spices to just the holiday season, you're missing out. Rim suggests these ways to challenge your palate to keep a wider variety of spices in play all year long. Experiment. Randomly pick a recipe featuring new to you spices and whip it up. Some people say, let's cook foods from a different culture, and suddenly they're getting into all different types of spices. Try new recipes more than once. It usually takes many times of eating a dish, especially if you've got young kids, before everyone likes it. Test it in a restaurant. Consider it a low-stake investment in your taste buds to explore new spices while dining out. Alternatively, buy a ready-made meal at the supermarket that features spices you're not normally drawn to. If you enjoy it, then you can find ways to incorporate those spices into your own cooking. And go back in time. Perhaps your grandparents or other ancestors loved a spice-heavy dish that you're not acquainted with. It can be edifying, both culinarily and personally, to bring it to your own table. And in Hints from Heloise, a way to recognize friends versus foes. Dear Heloise, I read your column in the Arizona Daily Star. I, too, had no idea who was calling me, whether it was a friend or foe, so to speak. I have a Samsung phone, and I categorize my contacts, such as all doctors, family members, auto services, and medical groups, for example, radiology and labs, by assigning different ringtones to each of the groups. I get hundreds of suspected spam and political calls. So if I hear the default ringtone, I don't answer the call and check my voicemails to see if someone left a message there. If there is no message, I block the number. When a distant ringtone is heard, I know to answer. And that was by B.E. in Vail, Arizona. And dear Heloise, I've read your column for many years. This is the first time that I've responded to an inquiry. Telling guests how much they have to pay to attend a wedding is just classless. If you're worried about your ROI, return on investment, don't spend a lot on your reception. Cut back on frivolous things. And that's from Patty C. in Waterbury, Connecticut. And dear Heloise, my first hint to Carol is to Google egg pods to find a nifty gadget for hard-boiling eggs in the microwave. I've had one for years and love it. In regard to Lynn W. in California and her African violets, my late grandmother, who lived in San Francisco, had them around her home. She sang to them and petted them, gently, of course, and they bloomed for her. Finally, to Linda Bloom in South Lake, Texas, thanks for the hint on recycling the bags that are used to deliver newspapers. I leave on a cruise in 3 weeks and will implement your suggestion. And dear Heloise, I wanted to write in response to the woman who was taught to peel her vegetables in the sink, but then had such a hard time getting all the peelings out of the way. What I have always done is to take an old newspaper, spread out a couple of layers of it in the dry sink, peel my potatoes and carrots and whatnot in there. Then I would just wrap it up and take it to the composter, throwing it out in the newspaper and all. Newspaper deteriorates quicker than vegetable peelings, and there's no mess in the sink. And dear Heloise, I have flashlights that plug into the wall sockets in every room. When the power goes out, the light comes on. They can either be left plugged in or removed for flashlights. And in Viewpoints, what America can learn from Finland. One of the world's most successful democracies offers powerful lessons. On July 2, 1776, a Finnish-American man held the destiny of the United States in his hand. That scene was the hall in Philadelphia that hosted the Second Continental Congress of the 13 American colonies of British America. The man of destiny was John Morton, Speaker of the Pennsylvania Assembly, and the swing vote in this state, in his state delegation that could create the United States of America. If Morton voted no, the influential colony would be recorded as opposed to independence. This could deal a fatal blow to the infant nation by delaying or dashing hopes for a vote for independence from Great Britain that was unopposed by any of the colonies. If he said yes, the Pennsylvania delegation would flip to a 3-2 pro-independence majority, creating unstoppable national momentum for a break with King George III's government. But it would place Morton and his fellow delegates at risk of condemnation by many constituents who are pro-crown loyalists or independence skeptics and in real danger of being executed if captured by British forces. The maximum penalty for treason against the king at the time was to be hung by the neck until the edge of death, then disemboweled and torn into four pieces while still alive. Morton made his decision. He voted for the independence resolution, and Pennsylvania's yay vote in the roll call of states enabled its unopposed passage. This was the moment that the United States of America came into existence. With the help of spirits from Finland, Morton's father, grandfather, mother, and wife were all of Finnish descent. The country that Morton and his colleagues created, July 2, 1776, became the wealthiest, most powerful nation on earth. And the society that Morton's distant relatives built in Finland also became one of the world's most successful democracies. For a nation of only 5.6 million people, brutal winter weather and few natural resources other than trees, Finland's achievements are striking. Finland ranks the number one world's freest nation in Freedom House's 2025 report, the happiest nation for 8 years in a row, the developed country with the most skilled adult population, and the nation that leads the world in progress toward achieving the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals, including health and well-being, gender equality, and ending poverty. How has this happened? One reason is that Finland is, in the words of Helsinki-based journalists Anu Partanen and Trevor Corson in the New York Times, a capitalist paradise, a nation committed to free markets and capitalism. According to the Heritage Foundation's 2025 Index of Economic Freedom, Finland has the best property rights in the world and scores higher than the United States in economic and investment freedom, judicial effectiveness, fiscal health, and government integrity. Taxes on personal income are significantly higher on average than in the United States, but they replace many large private expenses carried by U.S. households, and business and property taxes are lower. The national tax rate, Finland will be lowered from the current 20% to 18% in 2027, which compares with about 25% in the United States when state taxes are included. While Finns complain about their taxes, in the end, many people consider them worth it in exchange for a very strong social safety net, excellent universal public health care, and free high-quality education through university. Medical bankruptcy, the number one cause of bankruptcy in the United States, is almost unheard of, as is the long-term stress associated with crushing student debt. Rates of violent crime, homelessness, and hunger are extremely low. Finland is, as Partanen puts it, a well-being state. Finns don't have much to say publicly about religious values, such as compassion, charity, and humility. They just act on them. There is some political polarization in Finland and in the parliament. Debates over immigration and economy, stuck in a cycle of low growth and relatively high unemployment, are increasingly intense. But personal animosity in government plays out at a far lower intensity than the United States, for example, and this may be one of the most powerful lessons Americans can learn from Finland. When Finnish center-right politician Alexander Stubb won the presidential election last year, he headed for his Green Party opponent Pekka Haavisto's election night vigil for a surprise joint appearance. As the crowd cheered a standing ovation, the two men hugged, and Stubb told him, "You are one of the nicest people I've ever met." On the eve of America's 250th anniversary, Morton and Finland can remind us that now is a good time for Americans to declare independence from the tyranny of hating each other. William Doyle is an American writer and TV producer based in Helsinki. In 2015, he was appointed as a Fulbright Scholar to Finland. You're listening to a reading of articles and features from the Sunday Gusto from the Buffalo News on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. And some of the letters from Viewpoints, everybody's column, letters from our readers, misinformation about all electric buildings. Gas companies and home builders have been spreading misinformation about the upfront operating costs of electric homes, distorting and cherry-picking reports and hearings and lobbying. It appears that Governor Kathy Hochul is being duped by this misinformation. The result will undermine her affordability efforts as we ratepayers are forced to continue paying for the expansion of fracked gas pipes and other hardware. A study recently filed with the Public Service Commission thoroughly documents that all electric homes are cheaper to build and to operate than traditional ones, notwithstanding developers' complaints. President Trump's tariffs on building materials like lumber and aluminum play an outsized role in raising costs. All electric homes can save residents hundreds to thousands of dollars annually and provide a risk-free environment without the toxic emissions from gas appliances that have been shown to exacerbate childhood asthma and other illnesses. These homes are so efficient that they barely affect the grid, unlike huge data centers, which are poor economic development choices, or crypto mining, which is worse. The price of gas swings wildly and is predicted to double over the next year. The enormous cost of building out gas infrastructure will be borne by ratepayers for years and will be stuck with pipelines, including the connections from homes to gas lines, added to the bills of present gas customers not paid by the utility long into the future. And that letter was from Laura Gruby, Buffalo. Another one, utility rates are out of control. Every month I absolutely dread opening my electric and gas bill. With over 1 million New York households at least 2 months behind on their utility bills, I'm sure I'm not the only one who feels this way. We're already facing utility affordability crisis in New York, and I recently read an article about another big increase coming our way. Enough is enough. Residential utility consumers need an advocate at the table fighting for us when the utility rate increases are being decided at the Public Service Commission. For too long, this process has been dominated by the utility companies and big industrial users with deep pockets to engage in these complex proceedings. Fortunately, the state legislature recently passed a bill, A2468, that would help level the playing field by creating the State Office of the Utility Consumer Advocate, an independent entity dedicated to fighting on behalf of residential ratepayers in utility rate cases and other matters impacting the affordability and reliability of our service. Our governor has been spending a lot of time talking about making New York more affordable. If she's serious about it, she should start by standing up for utility consumers and signing this bill into law. From Pat Frey, Buffalo. And Americans should not fear their government. I lose my liberty in that moment, says Geraldo Ortiz, an American citizen who has been picked up twice while protesting in Charlotte. I was so nervous when I got home. I was crying like a baby, and it was terrible, he adds in an article appearing in The Guardian. Critics describe the agent's actions as indiscriminate at best and deliberately designed to instill fear in the community at worst, notes writer George Cheedy. The agents also attempted to raid an after-school program in Charlotte, promoting a program spokesman to contend that the goal was, prompting a program spokesman to contend that the goal was to instill fear on the part of everyone. The agents even raided a Latino church during a service and arrested one individual in front of his congregation. Is this what our forefathers fought for in the Revolutionary War against an uncaring and autocratic government based in Great Britain? It's time for all of us to pay attention, write our elected officials, and get involved in bringing our country back on course. And that's from Phil Zimmer in Jamestown. And in Nation and World, Hegseth stands by strikes. He delivers address to Reagan Presidential Library Defense Forum. Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth defended strikes on alleged drug cartel boats during remarks Saturday at the Ronald Reagan Presidential Library, saying President Donald Trump has the power to take military action as he sees fit to defend the nation. Hegseth dismissed criticism of the strikes, which killed more than 80 people, and now face intense scrutiny over concerns that they violated international law. Saying the strikes are justified to protect Americans, Hegseth likened the fight to the war on terror following the September 11, 2001 attacks. If you're working for a designated terrorist organization and you bring drugs into this country in a boat, we'll find you and we will sink you. There will be no doubt about it, Hegseth said during his keynote address at the Reagan National Defense Forum. President Trump can and will take decisive military action as he sees fit to defend our nation's interests. Let no country on earth doubt that for a moment. The most recent strike brought the death toll of the campaign to at least 87 people. Lawmakers sought more answers about the attacks and their legal justification, and whether U.S. forces were ordered to launch a follow-up strike following a September attack, even after the Pentagon knew of survivors. Hegseth also faces scrutiny over sharing sensitive military plans on his personal phone. Though Hegseth compared the alleged drug smugglers to Al-Qaeda terrorists, experts note significant differences between the two foes and the efforts to combat them. Hegseth's remarks came after the Trump administration released its new national security strategy, one that paints European allies as weak and aims to reassert America's dominance in the Western Hemisphere. During the speech, Hegseth also discussed the need to check China's rise through strength instead of conflict. He repeated Trump's vow to resume nuclear testing on an equal basis as China and Russia, a goal that alarmed many nuclear arms experts. China and Russia haven't conducted explosive tests in decades, though the Kremlin said it would follow the U.S. if Trump restarts tests. The speech was delivered at the Reagan National Defense Forum at the Ronald Reagan Presidential Foundation and Institute in California, an event that brings together top national security experts from around the country. Hegseth used the visit to argue that Trump is Reagan's true and rightful heir when it comes to muscular foreign policy. By contrast, Hegseth criticized Republican leaders in the years since Reagan for supporting wars in the Middle East and democracy-building efforts that didn't work. He also blasted those who argued that climate change poses serious challenges to military readiness. The War Department will not be distracted by democracy-building interventionism, undefined wars, regime change, climate change, woke moralizing, and feckless nation-building, he said. And the week in review, migrants' applications paused after shooting. The Trump administration paused all immigration applications, such as requests for green cards, for people from 19 countries banned from travel to the U.S. this year in the wake of the shooting of two National Guard members. The changes were outlined in a policy memo posted Tuesday on the website of U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services. President Donald Trump also said he did not want Somali immigrants in the U.S., claiming they add little to the U.S. and are too reliant on the social safety net. During the first hearing before a judge, Afghan national Ramanallah Lakhanwal, 29, pleaded not guilty to murder and assault charges Tuesday in the November 26th shooting of the National Guard members in Washington, D.C. And the Ukraine war. Ukraine and its European allies accused Russian President Vladimir Putin of feigning interest in peace efforts Wednesday after hours of talks with U.S. envoys at the Kremlin produced no breakthrough. Earlier, Putin accused the Europeans of sabotaging the efforts. And former Honduras President Juan Orlando Hernandez, sentenced last year to 45 years in prison for his role in drug trafficking hundreds of tons of cocaine into the United States, was released from prison Monday after a pardon from President Donald Trump. And lost plane, Malaysia's transport ministry said Wednesday that a private firm will resume a deep sea hunt for Malaysia Airlines Flight 370 on December 30th. More than a decade after the jet vanished without a trace. And an article about signal boosts. Thieves are stealing keyless cars in minutes, and here's how to protect your vehicle. Car thieves are using tablets and antennas to steal keyless or push-to-start vehicles, police warn, but there are steps owners can take to protect their vehicles. Recently, a group of masked individuals forcibly gained access into two vehicles sitting in the driveway of two separate Anaheim Hills, California homes and drove off with them, according to Anaheim Police Department. In both of the thefts, the alleged thieves used electronic tools to target and steal higher-end cars. Sutters, the spokesman for Anaheim Police Department, said that the department is seeing a trend in these types of thefts that target newer vehicles like a Dodge Challenger or Ford F-150 Raptor, vehicles that have a supercharged feature, a function that forces more air into the engine, which generates more power. Tablet programs reprograms car computer theft through home surveillance footage reviewed by the police department. Sutter said that burglars broke the back window of a white truck and jumped into the car through the window. The masked individuals then hooked up a tablet to the car's computer system to hack into the car. They reprogram it, hit the start button, and drove away. How to protect your vehicle. Some traditional methods for protecting your vehicle, like parking it in a garage, are still reliable, Sutter said. Another approach is putting a locking device on the steering wheel of the vehicle. Those can be defeated, but that can take a lot of time. It's not foolproof, but at least it's a strong deterrent. Accessing key fob signal theft. In the Anaheim Hills incidents, one of the vehicles was stolen by thieves accessing the key fob signal through an antenna. Many newer vehicles have a remote keyless entry system where a key fob emits a signal that unlocks the car door and, in some cases, starts the car when it's within a certain distance of the driver's side. The downside of this feature is a signal that is constantly being emitted from the key fob, similar to a debit card. To exploit that signal, thieves will get close to the house with an antenna in hopes of capturing and amplifying it so they can unlock the vehicle. This theft method can take less than 60 seconds to execute and is effective only when the key fob is in the proximity to the car. It's not uncommon for vehicle owners to leave their key fobs near front or back doors on hooks or in bowls where they can grab them on their way out and leave them when they return home. But these locations also make it easy for thieves to approach and use an antenna to capture the signal from outside the door. Experts suggest keeping key fobs near the center of the home so the signal is harder to pick up. You can also weaken the signal by purchasing a signal blocking bag or box to leave the key fob in. The bag or box is made of conductive metal mesh that blocks the electromagnetic signals that emit from the key fob. If you want to stop the key fob signal altogether, you can turn off the feature. Check your vehicle's manual and follow the instructions to turn off the remote keyless feature. And in humor, it's not easy being a keeper of tradition. There are days I feel like the last surviving gatekeeper to tradition. My mission is to keep the holidays from crashing into one another. In my rich fantasy world, Labor Day is followed by Halloween, Halloween is followed by Thanksgiving, and Thanksgiving is followed by Christmas. Never do they meet, mix, or mingle. Welcome to Dreamland. The early Christmas bombardment at the big box stores in 90-degree heat of late summer is disorienting. This is why you see dazed people in the parking lot wildly waving key fobs in the air trying to locate their vehicles. I've heard the reasoning. It's almost Halloween, so it's almost Thanksgiving, so it's almost Christmas. With that line of thought, it's also almost my birthday. Our son's family FaceTimed us on Halloween so we could see the costumes the kids wore for trick-or-treating. The whole family was gathered in front of the fire, roaring in the fireplace next to a lighted Christmas tree. "When did the tree go up?" I casually asked. "Oh, it appeared sometime in October," came the pre-planned casual answer. I'm a sequence and order person. I was a kid who separated the peas from the carrots. The ketchup goes next to the fries, not on the fries. No evergreens in the house until the last slab of Thanksgiving pie has disappeared. Just because I like order doesn't mean I have issues. Hold on, I see a dust ball on the floor next to the baseboard. Neighbors flooded the front of their house with orange and green lights for Halloween nearly the entire month of October. The evening of November 1st, the house was awash in red and green. They must not have November in their calendars. The battle to keep the holidays sensibly separated is like trying to sled uphill or assemble a snowman from the top down. If you decorate before Thanksgiving, you forfeit the right to complain about the little drummer boy's pa-ra-pa-pum-pum played on endless repeat. Ditto for Mariah Carey's All I Want for Christmas Is You. In addition to being a sequence and order person, I'm also a realist. The battle is futile. I know it. I think I'll go make a snow angel face down. In sports, NHL's 6-7 weekend for the Panthers. The final score of the Florida game Saturday, Panthers 7, Columbus Blue Jackets 6. And on the scoreboard, it read 6-7. Panthers meet a phenomenon. The viral term 6-7 was the talk of the Panthers locker room after their overtime win, even though the back-to-back Stanley Cup champions, like pretty much everybody else on the planet, have no idea what it means. I don't know what is going on with this 6-7 thing, said Panthers forward Sam Bennett, who scored the winning goal in overtime, but it's funny how it ended tonight. It seems possible that Bennett knows more about the craze than he's letting on. In a post-game interview with sideline reporter Katie Engelson of Scripps Sports, Bennett made the juggling hands gesture that has become synonymous with whatever 6-7 is. The 6-7 craze is so popular that Dictionary.com announced the phrase as its word of the year, even though it's not actually a word. The popular theory is that 6-7 gained popularity from rapper Skrilla's song from 2024 called Doot Doot 6-7 that made it to TikTok's videos and other social media mentions. And it's like the Panthers knew a game like this was coming. They played Saturday and play again at home on Sunday, which means they're playing on December 6th and December 7th. So yes, they're calling it a 6-7 weekend. Yeah, 6-7 night, 6-7 score. I'm sure the kids will have a lot of fun with that, Panthers forward Brad Marchand said. I know my kids were there doing the old 6-7 dance. It's fun when those things happen. briefly, the Heritage Classic, the Jets and Canadiens, will play outdoors next season when they face off in the Heritage Classic at Winnipeg's Princess Auto Stadium. The October 25th event will be the league's 8th Heritage Classic and first since 2023. And NBA, from France to NBA, Wolves rookie adjusts to Minnesota for the first time in his life. Timberwolves center Joan Berenger is learning how to speak English. The 19-year-old rookie is taking online classes. He's even learning how to drive as he adjusts to his life in America after growing up in France and playing professionally in Slovenia last year. Berenger, selected with the 17th overall pick in June's NBA draft, said he's getting better at understanding his coaches and his teammates. He's also able to conduct interviews in English. But when he arrived with the Wolves this summer, there was one teammate who really tested his English proficiency, a fast-talking, slang-dropping Anthony Edwards. "And when he speaks English, honestly, I don't really understand everything, but I try," Berenger said. "I get to understand him more and more, but words I never heard. His vocabulary is like a dictionary. I really learn everything." There's a lot that's new for Berenger as he heads to life in the NBA, as he adjusts to life in the NBA and America. That's true for all international prospects, but especially in Berenger's case, since he was a soccer player who converted to basketball in his teens. In the Wolves locker room, you're likely to find Berenger and countryman Rudy Gobert sitting next to each other and speaking in French before a game. The Wolves also have assistant coach Max Lefebvre and assistant video coordinator Jonathan Mesmaku, please pardon my pronunciation, who can speak French. Lefebvre and Mesmaku play an important role in practices for Berenger, who primarily works with Wolves assistant Kevin Hansen. Wolves general manager Matt Lloyd said the team has seen Berenger make great progress in both his on-court development and overcoming the language barrier. The term the Wolves often use with Berenger is a ball of clay because he has only played basketball for a handful of years and he has no bad habits to his game and they can mold him accordingly. We have the luxury of helping him develop these habits himself, Lloyd said. He's really unique, a character in the NBA, because he doesn't have bad habits. He hasn't really been exposed to anything other than just hard work and incremental gains. You're listening to a reading of articles and features from the Sunday Gusto from the Buffalo News on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. And the music reviews, Jingle All the Way, 10 of the best new holiday albums to add to your seasonal soundtrack. 'Tis the season to put on some brand new holiday music. The best way to get festive is to sing along to Christmas classics new and old. Don't know what to press play on? We've got you covered. In honor of the most wonderful time of the year, here are some of the best new holiday releases for the 2025 season. So grab a loved one, a cup of eggnog, and get to listening. Pentatonics, Christmas in the City. For an a cappella fan, there is no better news than yet another holiday album from Pentatonics. Across 18 tracks, Christmas in the City celebrates the magic of cosmopolitan life around the holidays and showcases the group's vocal athletics. Hear them reimagine the songs you know and love, as well as introduce a few originals, starting with Snowing in Paris, which features R&B pop star JoJo, and end with I've Got My Love to Keep Me Warm, a never-before-heard recording of the Frank Sinatra classic featuring Old Blue Eyes himself. And Evergreen Christmas Sessions, Hunter Hayes. Hunter Hayes is a newer name on the country scene than a few of the artists listed here, but that simply means he's a fresh voice to discover. His Evergreen Christmas Sessions is a brief introduction, just four covers of holiday standards, but it's a charming romp. Start with Winter Wonderland, Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas, and Run, Run, Rudolph, and Silent Night. Trisha Yearwood, Christmas Time. Country singer Trisha Yearwood's voice sounds like coming home. It makes her the ideal talent for a new holiday collection. This album is stacked with familiar tunes and perhaps best of all features Merry Christmas Valentine, a duet with her husband Garth Brooks. Blast that one at your get-together and there won't be a dry eye in the house. And Mickey Guyton, Feels Like Christmas. The country powerhouse Mickey Guyton Feels Like Christmas, and once you dive into these eight tracks, you will too, from her rendition of O Holy Night and her masterful take on Do You Want to Build a Snowman, from Disney's Frozen. There's a lot to love here. Charlie Brown Christmas, Vince Guaraldi. It's hard to believe, but 60 years ago, the Peanuts gang classic, A Charlie Brown Christmas, aired on television for the first time and became an almost instant sensation. Part of its charm, of course, must be credited to its whimsical score by jazz pianist Vince Guaraldi. To celebrate such a huge anniversary, Kraft Recordings is reissuing its soundtrack as good a reason as any to revisit these beloved songs. And Eric Benet, It's Christmas. R&B singer Eric Benet's first holiday album, It's Christmas, is filled with warmth. Consider it the sonic equivalent of curling up to a roaring fireplace on a snowy winter's evening. Don't believe us? Well, you'll have a listen to his take on Please Come Home for Christmas or Oh Holy Night to make you a believer. Or better yet, there's Christmas Morning featuring Benet's youngest daughters, Lucia and Luna. Tissues, you might want to grab a few. And the Chess Records Christmas album with various artists. Sometimes a compilation album is what a holiday party needs. Chess Records has the answer. The Chess Records Christmas album is an impressive collection of veteran talent. The release features everything from Chuck Berry's Run Rudolph Run and the Moon Glow's Hey Santa Claus to Lennox Avenue's Little Drummer Boy and the Salem Traveler's Merry Christmas to You. And a few more. Leanne Rimes' Greatest Hits Christmas. Just ahead of her Christmas tour, the country icon Leanne Rimes released Greatest Hits Christmas. It's exactly what it sounds like, a mash of classics and some of her best-known songs from her past holiday albums. There's also new collaborations like Aloe Black on That Spirit of Christmas and Gavin DeGraw on Celebrate Me Home. Roberta Flack Holidays. The world lost a giant in February when Roberta Flack, a Grammy-winning singer and pianist, died at 88, perhaps best known for her timeless take on Killing Me Softly with his song. The Christmas season brings Up another reason to celebrate her, a new release, Holidays, like many on this list, features originals and covers, and a selection of songs from Flack's classic, The Christmas Album. It holds special meaning this year. And Snow Globe Town from Brad Paisley. Some things just make sense together. Peanut butter and jelly, coffee and donuts, Brad Paisley and his touring band sitting down in Nashville to record a charming Christmas album. Snow Globe Town features 8 originals and 8 covers, exactly what the heart wants this holiday season. It's the former collection that will really connect, though. There are real charms to be found in Lit, That Crazy Elf, and the title track. And to round out our reading today, an article on gratuity, holiday tipping. The holiday season is traditionally a time to thank the service providers who help you throughout the year with a tip. You should prioritize those with whom you have a personal relationship, such as house cleaners, caregivers, and other people who regularly work in and around your home. Before you begin doling out the dollars, be sure to budget accordingly and always include a personal note or a thank you card. Consider the recommendations for common providers, housekeeper, nanny, dog walker, and home nurse, up to 1 week's pay. Regular hairstylist, manicurist, and trainer, up to the cost of 1 session. Building door person or superintendent, $20 to $100, and the amounts will vary depending on the level of service, your location, and your budget, of course. Trash and recycling collectors, $10 to $30. Mail carriers, U.S. Postal Service employees may accept non-cash gifts of up to $20 in value. Retail or restaurant gift cards are permitted, but cash equivalents such as Visa or MasterCard gift cards are not. And package deliverers. Delivery services such as FedEx and UPS often discourage or disallow workers from accepting cash or gift cards. Consider leaving a small care package with snacks or seasonal items such as hand warmers. Now, if you're listening to this publication online, you're probably using our website, a podcast player like Spotify or iTunes, a streaming service like Siro, or a smart speaker. Did you know that we have a dedicated app that can be downloaded to any mobile device like a smartphone or tablet for free? App users can conveniently access our live stream and any episode from our podcast easier than ever. To download the app, just type N, like N as in Nancy, FRRS for Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service in the search window in the Apple App Store or in Google Play Store. Or you can contact us anytime if you have any questions by calling 716-821-5555 extension 5. So you've been listening to a reading of articles and features from the December 7th, 2025 issue of the Sunday Gusto from the Buffalo News. We read from the Sunday Gusto from the Buffalo News every Sunday at noon. Your reader has been Elaine. Thank you for listening.
Coming up next in the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service, we have the front section of the Sunday Times. At 2 o'clock, we have the New York Times Opinion section. And at 3 o'clock, we have the New York Times Arts and Leisure section. Stay with us for these readings and more throughout the day. If you're listening to this publication online, you're probably using our website, a podcast player like Spotify or iTunes, a streaming service like Siro, or a smart speaker. Did you know that we now have a dedicated app that can be downloaded to any mobile device, like a smartphone or tablet, for free? App users can conveniently access our live stream and any episode of our podcast easier than ever. To download the app, just type NFRRS in the search window in the Apple App Store or in the Google Play Store. Contact us anytime if you have any questions by calling 716-821-5555, extension 5. Thank you. You're listening to the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. As of this year, our agency has broadcast more than 300,000 hours of radio readings. Volunteer radio readers read newspapers, magazines, and books to area people who are blind or have a print disability, who are provided reading radios. Radio Reading's broadcast signal is provided at no charge by WNED. Radio Reading broadcasts from studios at 1199 Harlem Road in suburban Buffalo. Please let others know about Radio Reading. It's your service. For more information on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service, call 716-821-5555. Five. The following program is intended for listeners who are blind, have low vision, or have